Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome. Good morning. A beautiful morning in Johannesburg. Morning, Jonathan. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Isaac.
Good. The 9 days are behind us. But I want to talk about this morning about a very, very special person, because on Tuesday, which was Tisha B'Av, we didn't have a show, but it was the Yahrzeit of the late Chief Rabbi Louis Rabinowitz, one of the most dynamic rabbis we've ever had in South Africa. And I'll give you a lot of insight into him in a few moments. But I also want to mention that, and we're going to talk about it, that this on Monday, which is Sunday night, is Tu B'Av, which is the Jewish Valentine's Day, where all the maidens go out dancing and singing and looking for a prospective husband. So my program on Sunday, The Art of the Cantor, is absolutely amazing. I've managed to research, and I'm going to play only music, chazonis, for a wedding. For example, there'll be the Sheva Brochas, the Miadir, the Hallelujah, the Shusha Orim. I'm sure many of you remember that when the late Louis de Swart used to sing it at the Berea Shul or at the Oxford Shul, you know.
So what do you mean about for weddings? Are you talking about from the chuppah till the reception? So right. The dance music.
The dance music.
That the bands play.
Yeah, and okay. Then, for example, the Sheva Brochas and the Boye Kala. It's really going to be something unbelievable. I'm playing 9 different recordings of the one chazan 4 times, but the others singing, as I said, we got a soloist called Avram Shulman. You haven't heard before. He's from Cape Town, the Garden Shul. Really, it's going to be a magnificent program. And there's a lot of weddings that are taking place already this Sunday evening.
Yes.
Because that's when everybody gets married, and of course also in Israel as well.
Yeah.
Now, how was your Tisha B'Av?
Yeah, you know, I try to make it different, because, you know, you can go through the paces, as it were, and you know, you sit and you read and whatever. But I meditated a lot, and you know, I mentioned before I found this Huddle Park, which is just around the corner.
Gordy,
it's about 6 minutes, and they've got beautiful paths, and I walked around, and you know, Rabbi Sacks brings those 3 beautiful questions that science and technology and economics can never answer: is who are you, why are you here, and how should I live my life? So, who are you? I've come to understand is I'm a Jew. And what am I here to do is to do or a goyim, to be a light unto the nations. And the final one is how should I live my life, is Torah and mitzvahs. And those are my 3 answers. Now, but the first question is who am I, the identity. And there's no doubt that the strongest identity I have is that of a Jew. Yes, I'm a man, and I'm a father, and I'm a son, and I'm on your show, and I'm a psychiatrist, and whatever it might be. But who I am, and Tisha B'Av, this year, I went into solitude for, I was at shul, of course, but I went 3-4 hours, and asking who is a Jew? And you can't be a Jew if you neglect our past. And we had wonderful past, but we've had horrors. We actually have had horrors. And just facing that, not averting it by getting caught up in all kinds of things, but just walking, sitting, standing, and what does it mean to be a Jew with this past of ours, right, which is a tragic past? And actually that was a very special few hours, not to be with the whole gang, as it were, which is good. And at the shul, for example, but also to
be on your own,
and just to face those, how can I say, fears, even going forward. I mean, you just look at the world and the anti-Semitism and what the Palestinian children are being taught about Jews and et cetera, et cetera. It's not that we, you know, we've got a past, and that is, the future is also coming on us. And that was, I think, my highlight of the 3 weeks, was those couple of hours just walking through the forest, just walking around the dam, just, you know, just reflecting.
Right. Just a matter of aside, when are you moving? You said you'd wait until after
Tishrei. Okay, so we should be moving, but you know that the mayor, Rabbi Herman Mashaba, he's taking over the billing crisis, and there's a small little, listen to this, there's a small little thing that on the sewer. It's this whole deal is on the sewer, because when they looked at the account, the billing people said, but we haven't signed for the sewer, because that house was subdivided. It's a whole story, and it's a legal issue. But, you know, one must be patient. So it should be any day now that it comes through, and we're looking forward to it, and we're all very excited.
I really hope the mayor will sort out this. I'll tell you why. I have an electricity problem. My average account is about 2,500 a month. But to my horror, a few weeks ago, I got an account for 24,000 rands.
Wow.
And they came to read the meter, but the chap who read it the wrong way around.
Yes, yes.
And then I've been to the council, I don't know how many times, to try and get it reversed. I've written letters, and they answer you, don't reply to this, your letter has been under investigation. Nothing has happened yet.
Mm.
But they tell me now I must go in and sign an acknowledgement of debt, so that I must pay it off, otherwise they cut off your lights, otherwise you must pay the 24,000 rand.
Something seriously wrong.
You're right. Yeah. Now, if you pay your 24,000 rand, there's no way, can you hear, Tabo, listen to this, there's no way you'll ever get your money back. Once you've paid that 24, it's gone. And then you've got to start all over again.
Yes.
And it's an absolute nightmare to try and get them to reverse this when your average is only 2,500 rand a month.
Mm, mm.
All of a sudden, 24,000. And then a few weeks ago, they came, I asked them to change the meter to see, they did come to change it, and they're taking the wrong readings again.
Yeah, yes.
And now the other day I got another reading for 6,000 rand. But I said, it's physically impossible. I only have one geezer at home. There's one person there really, and I'd not,
let's just imagine, let's say they keep the same workforce. Now more and more complaints. There's more and more complaints, and they don't have the staff to it, and it's costing them money. I'll tell you, from our side, when we sold the shul, we had to pay 12,000 rand when the average is just the rates, because it was prepaid electrical. So that's 3 months, so it should have been 3,000. 12,000, we couldn't put the transfer until we paid that 12. Now the lawyer is trying to reclaim that 9,000. He said it can take up to a year. I said, this is a crazy system. They don't know what's going on. And they're paying more and more people. And also the legal costs. I would like the mayor to be in this room and say, what is the legal costs of this mess?
Right. And you know, another thing is, you try and phone them.
Oh,
you can hold on for hours and hours.
Yes.
Your call is being attended to you. You're number 10 in the queue or something like that. And it goes on and on and on. And then eventually, if you do get through, they cut you off straight away.
Yes.
You can't get answers.
But look at this thing, is that we have to pay transfer duty, right? Which is another tax of the middle class, of course, and the rich. And that's a not insignificant sum. Now, the tax man, the source, is not getting that money. Because of a sewer, question of a sewer, of a mall. That could be a 2-minute correction.
Right.
It's not rocket science.
So, Tabo, in the townships, do you have the same type of problem with it?
You know what? I'm listening to you guys, and I'm asking myself a question to say, it's unfortunate that, what's going on, like, especially with you, it's only you in your house, and then you have to pay 24,000 rand. It's impossible for you to run electricity for 24,000 rand. And maybe most of the time you're not even at home. So what is it that you using electricity for? And in the township, the situation is very, very bad. And I think the billing system, there's a huge problem with it. I don't know when it started, and maybe you guys, since you guys were there before 94 and after 94, you can maybe say this is when the problem started when it comes to the billing problem. The reason why I'm actually using that, the previous government before 94 and the current one, The reason why I want the two differences is because of if you had people that were working with this system and then they left the system to these guys that were not trained enough to deal with the problem,
right,
then
right.
that's where the whole thing is going to get out of hand. Because if you've got Thabo here who doesn't know how this system works and then they read the meter wrong and then whatever report that they bring to the office, they believe it and then they don't even follow up.
Mm.
Maybe what needs to happen now, there needs to be another structure or another office that's going to deal with correcting those billing problems. Because of in Soweto, they say that we owe Eskom 6 billion rand. And to tell you the honest truth, I'm not going to hide it because of it's a situation that is there.
Mm.
In the whole Soweto, I doubt more than 2,000 houses are paying for electricity.
Yes, yes.
I'm not talking about the new houses that were built, the new houses. I'm talking about the houses that were built long before. I doubt if more than 1,000 people are actually paying electricity. Because in my neighborhood, in my street alone, it's only us at home. And I'm not saying this because of I'm trying to be better. It's because of my grandfather has this mentality of saying he needs to pay. But if he wasn't paying, we were not going to bother ourselves because it makes no difference whatsoever.
You know, I must mention one thing, by the way. So when I did find the council, eventually, in 1 week, they sent 3 different meter readers.
Right.
Everyone had a different reading.
Say that again.
1 week, and I actually asked them to write it down for me. Everyone had a different meter reading. Now, you can't tell me on a Monday if you read and you read on a Wednesday, it's gone up by 10,000 rand or 5,000 rand. Physically impossible.
Maybe you had a lot of hot water bottles there. It was a cold night. This is a major concern. Who's accountable? I mean, they send out these meter guys to read. Who's training them? Who's accountable to them? There must be somebody where the buck stops.
Yeah, and they used to have private companies coming to read the meters.
Yes.
But they don't have that anymore.
Right.
They've done away with that. And as I said, how can you have 3 different readings in 1 week?
Thabo
mentioned as well. You know, the system, they put in a new computer system. Apparently, they bought the wrong system. They got it from Austria or something like that, and it's not geared for South African
setup.
Like, remember this what's going on with Prasa. They bought all these new trains.
They were too high. Yeah.
They were too high, so the tracks were too small to take these big these trains, but they've already paid out the millions. So they bought a new system, a computer system, which is completely useless. It's absolutely redundant.
Now, I'm going to tell you something that's happening with our government, and when you try, as young people, when we try to say that, let's work with the government now. Now, here's a problem of the billing crisis. And then you go and say to the government, you go to their offices and say, I've got a solution. There's a billing problem that we know that is going on. And then can we work together? Can I assemble or can I start up something whereby we're going to deal with this issue? They're going to tell you that it has to go through tender processes and stuff like that. How do you take something to a tender process where else it was never there in the first place?
So I think just this to moderate is, I think this is another show, but I think it's important that this is a real common problem. This is a problem and this is a community problem. And you do bring up the past and, it's a complicated to run a city now. And, but it just seems like there's no will to run a proper system but there is the cost of this crisis is enormous.
It's
because
enormous.
Just for example the transfer tax. But let's get back to Rabbi Rabinovitz.
But we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a few moments.
Okay.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
So we're now going to talk about, as I mentioned, that Tisha B'Av was the yahrzeit of the late Chief Rabbi Louis Rabinowitz Zatzal. He passed away on Tisha B'Av 1984, and had he been alive today, he would have been 111 years old. Now, Louis Rabinowitz he was born in Edinburgh, his father, Rabbi Jacob Rabinowitz Zatzal, was the rabbi of the Edinburgh Synagogue, and Louis Rabinowitz studied all his life in England. He was a professor of English. He wrote many, many books, and he was a senior chaplain during the war, the Second World War in Normandy, and in the Battle of El Alamein, that's the Desert War. With, we remember that Rommel, who was then known as the Desert Fox. And then in 1946, he was offered the position to become Chief Rabbi of South Africa because Chief Rabbi Yehuda Loeb Landau had passed away 2 years before. Now, 3 years before. Now, Louis Rabinowitz held very three positions in London. The one was at the Cricklewood Shul, Hackney, South Hackney, and the other one was Shepherd's Bush. Now, just as an aside, the chief rabbi at that time in Great Britain was Chief Rabbi Joseph Hertz. Hertz was in South Africa at the beginning of the century, 1898, and he left here in 1911 to go to America to the famous Fifth Street Shul, and then he was nominated to be the chief rabbi of Great Britain when Rabbi Herman Adler passed away. Now, Rabbi Hertz was an absolute dynamic speaker, one of the most brilliant ever.
Do you have some recordings of his talk?
I'll come and I'll tell you what he said. I'll quote you a lot of his things as well. And he was a very short man, but he was a very dynamic person. And the person who appointed him was a chap called Sir Haley Cohen, who was Waley Cohen, who was the well, the president of what was then the Federation of Synagogues or the United Synagogues of Great Britain. And they didn't get on together. He was very dynamic. And he once made the following statement: small in stature, very wise, a terror for his size. That was how he described him.
Yeah.
Now, just to mention about Hertz, because it'll follow on with Louis Rabinowitz. Hertz, the world, the Jewish world, owes him a debt of gratitude. And first of all, he was very anti-reform. When he was in South Africa, he came from Europe, went to America, the Syracuse University. He came here. He was the rabbi of what they call the Witwatersrand Hebrew, later became the Witwatersrand Old Hebrew Congregation. They then merged with the Park Hebrew Congregation in 1914 to become the United Hebrew, which was in Vaughan Street. But after the First World War, which ended in 1918, they formed what they call the League of Nations. And they were going to change the calendar. Now the calendar was based on what we call the Gregorian calendar, which we still have today.
Right.
But they were going to change it to the Julian calendar. Now the Julian calendar is based on Julius Caesar, the famous Roman emperor. Now the difference is that if you would have had that Julian calendar, when Shabbat would have fallen, now the dates changed, you would have had a Shabbat falling out on a Monday or on a Wednesday.
No, I'm not with you. Let's go back to basics. Gregorian is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday,
Saturday. Saturday is Shabbat.
So, yeah.
But the Julian calendar.
What was the proposal?
The proposal was go back to a Julian calendar.
Which was?
5 days a week, not seven.
5 days a week?
5 days a week.
Never heard of this.
Yes, yes. And they were going to change it. So every fifth day
would be
Shabbat. Yeah. So the day would be on Shabbat, with a Saturday. The Sabbath would fall out on a Sunday, or it would fall out on a Wednesday.
It would be every fifth day.
Every fifth day, yes.
So you have four working days.
Yes.
So what were the days, what do you remember what the days of the week would have been? Like the first day would have been, wouldn't have been Monday.
Monday, yes.
Yeah, but was there a special name for it?
There were special names for
it. So the one that changed it throughout the world?
Well, the whole world, the League of Nations, they wanted to change.
Change.
To a Julian.
To a 5 day.
To
wow.
a 5 day.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, because in certain parts of Europe, they only have a 5 working day. They don't work on a Saturday and a Sunday.
Yes.
But in certain parts, like you go to Greece, Sunday is a working day.
Mm.
In Israel, it's a working day. So, but Rabbi Hertz was instrumental in canvassing all the religions of the world.
Yes.
He even went to the Reform and to the Catholics and everything to get them to not change the calendar. They remained the Gregorian. Because you imagine the chaos that would have been if we would have had a Shabbat on a Monday and the next week the Shabbat's on a Wednesday, because it just worked out that way. You know, at the moment in the Jewish calendar, we go according to what we call the lunar, yes, not the solar.
Yes.
So if it's Rosh Chodesh, some months are 2 days in the month, some months can be 1 day in the month.
Yes.
And so, but
we have the leap years.
And they're the leap years every 4 years.
You add another month, yeah.
And the mother month is added on. Yeah. So, but it's a very intricate thing, but that's what he changed.
So what would be the advantages? There must have been some kind of argument for advantage.
No, there was no advantage.
This is one of those silly ideas.
Silly ideas they came up with.
Crazy.
The other thing that he was very instrumental with is that he arranged. He asked and he saw that Hebrew was recognized as an international language. They didn't want to, but he got it recognized as an international language. Now, why I'm mentioning this? Because Louis Rabinowitz then was in London and he was becoming very well known. And when Rabbi Hertz inducted Louis Rabinowitz into the shul, or the Cricklewood shul, he made the following statement. Now I know Great Britain has another great orator, but modesty prevents me from telling you who the other one is. Right, that was Louis Rabinowitz. Now let's get back to Louis Rabinowitz. I'll just tell you a few things about him. Now, Louis Rabinowitz was a very dynamic person. The most, in the pulpit, he was supreme. There was no one to touch him when he spoke. If you went to the great synagogue here, on a Friday night, it was chock-a-block. You couldn't get in. We used to have in those days at the Cranbrook Hotel, before it became the Connoisseur, the Jewish College. And when he gave a lecture, you could be sure there was standing room only.
Mm.
Now, let me give you an example. And he was a very ardent Zionist, very anti the government, the national government. And in those days, when he was there, the Prime Minister, when he came in 1946, a little later on, was Hendrik Verwoerd. And he used to criticize the government of the day, Hendrik Verwoerd, from the pulpit. Now, if anybody who criticized the government would be arrested or deported. There was a rabbi in Port Elizabeth who was deported because he criticized the government. But Louis Rabinowitz, listen to this, Tauber. He said, I challenge any of the government to come into my synagogue and try and arrest me. That's what he said. He went into the pulpit. They didn't dare come into the shul.
So what years were these now?
These are 50s and 60s.
So it was the early time of the nationalists.
The early time. It got
quite heavy in the 60s and the 70s. I think Rabbi Bernhard was.
Yeah, Bernhard
was. He was visited by the secret police.
Bernhard was away. They had already issued him with two deportation.
Is that so?
They were going to deport him. But if he was lucky, he managed to speak to Harry Schwartz. You remember Harry Schwartz,
yes,
the Member of Parliament? And Harry Schwartz managed to speak to the Minister of Interior, and they saved him. They were going to deport him. But Rabinowitz challenged the security police to walk into the synagogue and arrest me. They wouldn't. They dared not do that. They were so frightened of him. Now, when I say Rabinowitz is a dynamic speaker, he didn't demand respect. He commanded respect. When you saw him, he was a tall man. I don't know if you ever...
A short man.
No, he went late in the years, but he was very tall in stature.
He went short.
Don't forget, he was a chaplain in the British Army. And let me give you another example as a Zionist. In 1946, there's a famous boat called the Exodus, which is going to dock in Haifa. And on the boat, they were bringing Jews from the camps, the deportation, you know, they came out of the Holocaust, all these camps. And the British government, they had the mandate of Palestine. It wasn't 1948 yet, it was 46. And the British government, as the boat was going to dock, sent that boat back to Cyprus. And all those Jewish DPs, you know, deportees, refugees, or whatever they want to call them, were sent back and put into concentration camps in Cyprus.
Mm.
And the news came through That was on a Thursday. Don't forget, we didn't have television. We had the radio. We had what they call the BBC. You listened every night. This is the BBC calling, and you heard Big Ben at the back, the clock, right?
Yeah.
The news came through. Louis Rabinowitz called for a public meeting on that Sunday at the Balfour Park. And that's where the terminus was. It stopped there. There was no Glen Hazel. There was no, that was the Balfour Park as a terminus. So we all walked down. We were all in our, what we call, youth movements, whether it was Mizrahi, Beitar, Habonim.
What were you?
Sorry?
Well, you were?
Yeah, I was there.
No, but what camp did you belong to?
I was with, Hashom HaDati, which later became B'nai Akiva.
Okay.
Right. We all walked down there and they bust. There must have been, I can't tell you how many hundreds of thousands of people, 50, 40,000 people. It was chock-a-block. And Louis Rabinowitz spoke. And this is what he said. My people have just come out of a camp and they've been sent back to another camp. Is this what I fought the war for? And by the way, he was dressed in his army uniform. He had his cap from the government, you know, the uniform. He had all his medals on him. And he took off his medals, and he threw them on the ground, and he stamped on them. Good. And the crowd went wild. But, of course, the border deputies weren't very happy.
Yes.
Because you're not political. Yeah. He's insulted the king, King George VI, taking your medals off. And he made the following statement. I will not sacrifice my principles on the altar of expediency.
Mm.
That was Louis Rabinowitz. That's how forceful he was. And he really, the crowd just absolutely adored him for that. And when years and years later, after he left South Africa in 61, he was nominated to become the chief rabbi of Great Britain. Don't forget, he was the mayor of Jerusalem for many years in Israel. In 1980, Sir Israel Brody had died. And they were going to appoint a new chief rabbi, and they were going to appoint a rabbi, Yaakov Herzog, the son of the General Herzog's father, Chief Rabbi Yitzhak Halevi Herzog, who was the first chief rabbi of Israel and Palestine. And unfortunately, Yaakov Herzog died of cancer. And Louis Rabinowitz was nominated. And another one who was nominated was Chief Rabbi Lord Jacobowitz.
Mm.
And Louis Rabinowitz lost by one vote.
Mm.
The reason being because somebody voted against him because he insulted the king. And Louis Rabinowitz wrote a letter to the queen explaining to her what had happened, and it wasn't to insult the king. But she wrote back a letter to him, and she answered him, and I've got that record on letter on file.
Hmm.
Where she said she has nothing against him and is titled to stand as chief rabbi, because don't forget, she has the one who has to sign that thing. Because the chief rabbinate in Israel is appointed by the government, by parliament. And when he lost, he made the following statement, the better man has lost. That's Louis Rabinowitz.
So, one of the reasons why he left in 61, was that just that his contract had ended?
No, he just wanted to retire. He wanted to go to Israel.
But he wanted to become the chief rabbi of
London. That was years later. They offered him in the 80s. So, Jacobowitz got it. But he was a very staunch revisionist, I'm sure, a Zionist.
Yeah.
So, we're just going to take a break. We'll be back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. So I'm talking about Louis Rabinowitz and how dynamic he was. Now, in the 1950s, I can't remember, they put out the London Illustrated News. I'm sure many of you may have seen it, but the younger generation wouldn't have. It was a tabloid, beautiful, illustrated magazine-type newspaper printed in color, to choose the best orator of that decade, 10 years. And the names that came up were Winston Churchill, Abba Aban, Louis Rabinowitz, Stephen Wise, Abba Hillel Silver. I'm sure many of our listeners may not even know who I'm talking about, Professor Toynbee. And Louis Rabinowitz was voted the most greatest orator of that decade.
Do you have recordings?
All Rubinowitz's recordings, but it's all on these big old tapes. I've got to have them changed.
There's no CDs, because I would love, you know, that's what we miss today, I think. Although the Americans, and there's a couple of British, some American rabbis are magnificent. There's a rabbi that was here, Shapiro, was absolutely outstanding. But I just do notice that there's almost a deterioration in orators. It's like, it's very monotonal, and there's no passion in it.
I tell you what it is. In London, when you became a rabbi, you had to go for training to speak. There was Jewish College.
Yes.
And you had to learn. They taught you how to present.
Yes.
And Louis Rabinowitz also, I remember, he had five disciples here. The one was Benny Isaacson. Please may he be well. I don't know if you've ever heard him speak.
Yes.
He's another Louis Rabinowitz. Dennis Isaac, Rabbi Isaac, was brilliant.
Can I just tell you about Rabbi
Benny?
Benny. When I did hear him once, he was at the yeshiva, Gedola, and he was introduced by the late Rosh Yeshiva at the Brocha.
Yes.
And he said that Rabbi Isaacson had gone from school to overseas for 8 to 10 years, and this is how it should be, and that he really... Well, Rabbi Isaacson got up and he said, I want to just tell you, those were your worst years. I was so lonely. Not to come home to your parents' home for 8 to 10 years, but it was... I just felt that passion.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just words. It's, you have to have energy and emotion. And
yes. So Louis Rabinowitz, there was Rabbi Isaacson, there was Dennis Isaacs, there was Abner Weiss, there was Eric Kay, and there was Gerald Mazabeau. Now, Louis Rabinowitz taught them how to speak and how to preach. And there's, when you'd give a speech, there's got to be a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Right.
You just don't go on and on. But now, I've heard lots of American rabbis talk. Now, even now, I'm not criticizing Rabbi Jonathan Sacks is brilliant, but Jonathan Sacks can't come near Rabinowitz because he hasn't got that passion and that force. When Rabinowitz spoke, you could hear a pin drop.
Yeah.
Nobody, you were terrified. He spoke with such force. You kept your attention.
Yeah.
Today you don't get those rabbis. They got good content, excellent, but they don't get your attention the
delivery
way
is
got it. Now, and he was so powerful. Let me give you one example. In the early days when he came here, all the landslide societies, at the friendly societies, used to have functions. And one of the functions was held at the Diamond Club.
Mm.
And it was heard they were having it, and Louis Rabinowitz, that it wasn't going to be kosher. In those days, it wasn't strict. And he took with him Rabbi Kosofsky. But just as an aside, to belong to the great synagogue in those days was to be somebody, something, really. So Rabinowitz walked into the Diamond Club, went up to the chairman, and he said, I want you to announce to your people, your guests, they're all eating non-kosher, you're eating non-kosher food. So the chairman says, I will not, they've paid, and they're going to get that what they've paid for. So Rabinowitz grabbed the mic and he banged on the rostrum and he said, Yidden, er es tafus, you are all eating treif. I want you to leave this venue, this hall now. And everybody stood up and walked out. Do you know why? They were petrified of him for one reason. The following week, most of those people who were there were members of his shul, and he would actually criticize them from the shul there by name. I'll give you another example. There was certain gentleman who didn't give his wife a get. He gave her a divorce, but not a get.
So she was remarried. She was a good enough. Yeah.
But he remarried a non-Jewish woman in court civilly, and Louis Rabinowitz, and he was a very well-known person in this community, and he was a member of the great synagogue. And he was in shul that Friday night. And Louis Rabinowitz said the following. There's a gentleman in my synagogue who refuses to give his wife a get. If he's not in my office on Monday morning to make the necessary arrangements, I will publicly denounce him from this pulpit.
Mm.
And that gentleman on Monday morning came and signed the get papers. That's how powerful he was.
Is Rabbi Rabinowitz born? can you mold a bocha now? But it's interesting that you said Jews College, they went for
training. Oratory.
And that's what should be. You know, yes, understand the Gomorrah and the halachas and do, basav chalav, and that's fine. But if you're going to be a community rabbi or teacher, you must be able to present and structure and use your voice in a proper way.
And there's another thing.
I think Rabbi Tetz. He actually went when he was a young man.
Yes, I'll tell you another thing.
And I think a few have. But
in Jewish College in London, we did have it here at the Federation of Synagogues in the early days because I was involved. They used to teach a rabbi how to visit the sick.
Yes.
Because a lot of rabbis go to visit the sick and they don't know what to say and they feel embarrassed and one thing and another. They teach a rabbi how to go and to... go to a shiva house when someone's in mourning.
Yes.
How to talk to the people and to try to...
It should be the opposite. How not to talk. Not to talk.
But, not to talk. But what to tell them and how to get over their grief and that. And they were trained by this in London. In London, they were trained how to give a speech, a drosha. Give me one example. There was Rabbi, and I'm going to mention his name because unfortunately he's passed away, but this is not talking out of turn. The late Rabbi... Eric Kay, and I went to school with him, and he went to Tel Yeshiva. He was assistant to Louis Rabinowitz, and he was going to be in the pulpit that one Friday night. And Louis Rabinowitz says, "Let me see your drosha for the night." And he looked at it, and he took it up, and he said, "Sorry, cross your T's, dot your I's. You're not going to say this. This is wrong. That's wrong. That's wrong." I'll give you another example. There was a rabbi at the Yovel Shul. The Yovel was part of the Great. They were United Synagogue. Mm-hmm. And the rabbi there also, he picked up the phone, and he said, "Let me see what you're talking about tonight." So he sent in his drosha. He said, "That's rubbish." Took it up and tore it up. He said, "You go home and rewrite it and bring it to me, and then you'll be able to preach." That's how he was.
He kept a very high standard.
And,
and for his good. You know, my good wife is, she's really top certificate university in the medical education. And she brings her master students up to a standard that is, what it has to be, it's not 51%. She wants a 90%. You know what I mean? You can't ever get 100. But why? Because she recognizes the potential. She's not scared to confront them and say, "This is not good enough." And this is what we have to do. It's not a negative. We have to have a stronger self-esteem and say, "Okay, I accept criticism, not because it's attacking me as a person. It's making me a better, for example, orator or writer."
Right. Now, let me example. Rabbi Dr. Dennis Isaacs, all his disciples, he told them, "Before you go in the pulpit, write out your drosha."
Yes.
And put it on. And Rabbi Isaacs used to always write it out. Oh, by the way, I've got them at the Beis Din. We've got them on file. They're all on cards going back 40, 50 years. Every single one of his. It was written out. And that's how he wanted it. He said, "You don't just walk into the pulpit and start talking, because that's when it's no good."
Yes, then just start associating.
Then there's
association. Yeah, and or you take out a safe and you read a Rashi, and then there's no structure.
But let me tell you what the opposite is. When he first arrived in South Africa, the committee said to him, "Listen, before you go into the pulpit, we want to see what you're going to talk about." Mm. So he said, "Okay." So he sent them in that Friday afternoon what he's talking about. He wrote it out. Comes in the pulpit, he talks about something completely different. They said, "But this is not what you sent us." He says, "Nobody tells me what I'm going to say." Now, I'm going to tell you one reason why Louis Rabinowitz was like that. Louis Rabinowitz's father, who was in Edinburgh, was treated very shabbily by the Gaboyim, the committee. Mm. And Louis Rabinowitz...
Was his father a rabbi?
His father was a rabbi. Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, his father had an accent. He couldn't talk proper English. He came from Europe. And he once had to go to give evidence in a court about Shechita. And the magistrate made an absolute mockery of him. Mm. So Louis Rabinowitz, this is something which is unheard of, and I'm sure listeners have never heard it, went in front of the Oran Kodesh, the Ark, and he took a solemn vow, an undertaking, that no one ever will talk to him the way they spoke to
him. How old was he then?
He was about 20, just got his smicha.
He decided at that point.
No one will ever talk to him the way they spoke to his father. And that is why he became the most dynamic rabbi we've ever had. When you saw him, the rabbis were petrified of him. But when it came to solving a rabbi's problem with a congregation, the congregation were petrified of him. You know, I could go on and on about it. We'll just take a break. We'll be back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. We're talking about the late Louis Rabinowitz, and as I speak to Dr. Mach, we'll continue about him next week. But just to remind you that Shabbat comes in today at 5:25. Motzei Shabbat 6:16 tomorrow evening. The Parsha is Ve'et Hanan. It's known as Shabbat Nachamu, Comfort, O Comfort Ye. And as I mentioned on Sunday, we have the Art of the Cantor, which I'm playing special music for weddings. You know, we have all the weddings taking place on Sunday night and Monday because Tu B'Av, which is known as the Jewish Valentine's Day, and all the maidens used to go out singing and dancing, looking for a possible.
I've got a very nice idea. What is it, 4 to 5?
4 to 5.
I think they should bring all the chuppas at 4 o'clock and just put on your show, and they don't have to pay for the chazan.
Right.
But I just wanted to first of all, Eschanan, you know, personally, is my youngest son's bar mitzvah, and we had, of course, in observatory shul there in Urania, but we went for the brocha to the old observatory. You know, with the telescope.
Yes, I know.
And we made a hole. We had about 150 people.
Above Uranian
Street.
Yeah.
The second thing is that today, I don't know how well you're aware of this, but there's something called death by PowerPoint. PowerPoint.
Yes.
And it's become a plague, I think, because people now, they're designing their PowerPoint slides, and they're not even talking to them, and they're expecting the people to read, look how good I am. They're losing the oratory point. They just hand it over. And this has become a problem in communication, is that people who've got the knowledge, but they haven't developed the skills. They don't understand who the listener is. Because a listener can only pay attention for about 1.2 seconds. And you have to keep that attention going. And what I've learned from you today is there was a man called Rabbi Louis Rabinowitz, and he kept everybody's attention, even prepared in a massive front of 50,000 to stand on his medals, or to say to his congregation at the Diamond Club, you know, you're eating treif. That's the leadership we want, to tell it as it is, but be convinced what you're saying is absolutely right, not for your own ego, but for the development of the potential of your listeners.
Right. So I just want to thank Taba for controlling and for participating, and for Dr. Mark, to wish you all a Shabbat Shalom. Have a lovely weekend. Go well. And don't forget, Tuesday, we got the Talk of the Town between 9 and